Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis,
yes,
right here on
is.
720 WGN. All right, John Seidel is with us from The Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times.
How are you?
It's been a long time since anybody's been able to say that. You got a book out called Second City Sinners. Now, what I immediately did, they just handed me a copy.
Yeah, you just thumbed through it real quick?
Yeah, literally the last 20 seconds, and I'm going back here and I'm looking at he's got an index.
Okay.
Which is good. Because
right,
an index
helpful.
Is of a very, so I'm in the C's right now, the index. I'm just making sure that I am Chicago, Cook County, hold on. O'Connor, Julia Connor, okay, and Jim Colosimo. All right.
So they skipped over you.
Colosimo.
Saving it for the sequel.
Yeah. All right. That's very good. And I'm going to look at some other letters here as I look around here. I'm going to see what... the Volstead Act. That's a good one. Let's see. All right. Now, this... I love the idea of this because there's... One of the things I think I adore most about Chicago is the grimy side of Chicago. I think that's every...
The current grimy or the historic grimy?
Well, if you look at the historic grimy into where the current grimy is, it's connected in a lot of ways.
That's true.
There are you can draw a direct line from the Capone era. Although we were just talking about this with the death of Joy the Clown Lombardo, that you can draw a direct line all the way through for the last 100 years in Chicago of... people who, the flow chart, you always see that in those like movies, crime movies, and the FBI, they're sitting around, they got a flow chart. They actually do. The FBI office in Chicago has that flow chart. As a matter of fact, the FBI office in Chicago used a picture that was taken at a great now deceased restaurant in the western suburbs, Slicker Sam's, one of the greatest restaurants, the best clams you ever had and mussels you ever had in your life. Honest to God.
Yum.
Just the best. But there was a picture that would hang in that restaurant of these guys that were, it was basically a flow chart of the mob, and they put it up in the restaurant, and the FBI got a picture of the picture
for reference,
right? And they put it up there, and then they would literally color in the picture for the guys that they put away,
right? Is that that is the Last Supper?
That's what they call that. That's what they call that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, and that's why this was so interesting for me to work on as a reporter covering present day Chicago. I got to spend last year digging through the archives, both through microfiche and just through our physical files too, to put together some stories, some really old historic crime stories as well, and give me a chance to see some parallels like you're talking about.
If you go back to like Dillinger or H.H. Holmes from Devil in White City, I mean, were the headlines splashier then? Did they cover crime in any different way?
It depends who you were looking at. I focus primarily on the Chicago Daily News as well as the Sun and the Times, basically the predecessors for the Sun-Times, right? And the Daily News, it had kind of a more formal style for most of the time.
It was an evening paper.
Yeah, it was an afternoon paper.
It was definitely for people wearing ties to work.
Sure.
Yeah. It was not a factory gate paper, but, as the Sun was.
Right. And then there were the Hearst papers, and I think especially in the 20s, who really were splashy and kind of had that yellow journalism style. But this book is mostly focused on, I kind of tried to tell the stories as they were told in the Daily News, as well as the Sun and the Times, just to and focus on the writing. Even some of the better known tales I talk about, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is one that's been written about a lot, right? But the Daily News had great coverage of that on that day, and there was a reporter who actually got into the scene. We'd never be able to get into the scene of that right there that day.
Nowhere near it.
And he wrote this piece about what it was like in there. It was the way it was written. You'd never see that. Unlikely to see it at all in the newspaper, but this ran at the top of the front page above the fold. And so it's just really interesting stuff that I tried to
do. What did you learn from that one, the Valentine's Day Massacre? Just sort of the firsthand account?
Yeah, it was the firsthand account. And also the Daily News had a police expert give their idea of what probably happened in that garage that day again. And so that was kind of the basis. That was the narrative I tried to use in the book.
Isn't that a funny thing, though? Now you stop, flash forward 100 years, essentially. And you watch cable news, and they have the same thing. They have an expert, right? They have military experts or
so
police
true.
Experts or whatever it is, doing the guys on their payroll that would explain things. I mean, this has never really changed. So in that particular circumstance, was that accurate? Because there have been many retellings and different attributes assigned to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Right, and so there have been different versions. I feel like this one pretty much hewed with the other versions that I've read. It kind of stood up against, I think, the modern tellings of what happened in there.
Gang.
Right, yeah.
the North Side. It was the North Side Irish gang, right? Mm-hmm.
That was gunned down.
That was gunned down by it was Capone's guys. We assume
that's right? always been the assumption. And Capone's face was on the front page of the Daily News that day with those Ooh. Articles. I mean, they went straight to him. So I mean, it was all they were all on top of it.
Yeah, you know, what was interesting was one of the traditions of the ink-stained wretches of Chicago journalism was to, at big crime scenes, bloody crime scenes, was to go get that their day's newspaper, whatever it was, and dip it in the blood. And then they would have that as the token from that particular incident. Mm. The Charlie Johnson, the dad of Jim Johnson, the great Jim Johnson, mm-hmm. and the grandfather of Alexis Del Cid, all great journalists, like three generations of great journalists. He had the Dillinger one from the Biograph Theater.
That is nuts.
It's a crazy thing, and you could tell. I mean, they got it tested recently because they wanted to go to a museum
because they wanted to put it on eBay or no they want to put it in a museum.
No, put it into a museum because it's an important that's part of the legacy of journalism here is that it's also a. You know, it takes a certain kind of person, John. I think you know this, and perhaps you're one of these guys. It takes a certain kind of person to go out and want to get into that.
No, yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, it's interesting, and we talk about it, people who do this job and the effect that it has on you. But you're also, right, while you're dealing with that effect, there's also just, I guess, kind of a thrill of being in the mix of everything and wanting to know more, wanting to get an explanation for the unanswered questions.
And hopefully, and you've done this many times, is getting a scoop and probing even further, contributing to the conversation in a way that breaks through and tells facts that you didn't know about before.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right, that's key. I mean, being able to bring something new to the conversation is what we all want to do. I mean, and in this world where we see lots of kind of the same story being told, I mean, that is really what is driving us, is to bring new facts out.
You know, it's interesting because you have a whole thing in your book about Dillinger and about his escape, right, from Lake County Jail in Indiana and all
Such
of that.
A story.
With an escape route. I mean, if you are into, like, I see this bus that goes, this trolley that goes by 15 times
tour?
A day down here, right? Well, there's a couple of them. There's a Chicago Crime Tour, there's a Mob Tour,
I saw one on my way over.
Yeah. And they go around and it's so popular. And the spots have a certain thing, you know, where they go, oh, we're going to stop here and then, you know, we're going to get the Harry Carey's chips because this is what it's all about.
They might as well make money off our reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it is interesting that there's still such commerce for this. But, you know, again, it ties into what is also happening today. In this book, in Second City Sinners, what is the story that you thought you knew? That when you did it for this book, changed a little bit for you.
It changed a little bit for me. You know, the one that's coming to mind is the Leopold and Loeb case. I guess that I didn't know as much about the Daily News' role in solving that crime, and maybe other people do, but I mean, that was one that jumped out at me. You know, they helped match the typewriter, Nathan Leopold's typewriter, right? From the ransom note, there was a typewritten ransom note. They found a classmate of Nathan Leopold's to give them some of his typewritten notes.
University of Chicago, right? Weren't they? Were they University of Chicago?
Right. Yeah. USC.
There you go. That's one for Northwestern. Yeah, okay.
And
go
so
Cats.
They got those notes and they matched them up to the ransom note and that quickly helped lead to the confession. So there was that, and there were also a couple other stories that I tried to bring out. You know, I talked about the Black Hand, which I don't think it's talked about very often. And there's a story about a butcher whose wife goes missing, who I'm not sure that's really been written about before, but that was one story that I wanted to kind of bring out that maybe would be new to some people.
You think about all of these movies have been made about these cases. I mean, they just have captivated audiences for years and years, and people want to read about them. How do you weave all these stories together in one book? How was that a challenge?
It was a little bit of a challenge, yeah. I mean,
do you do it like chronologically?
Yeah, I do. So I start out with the Haymarket riot, the Haymarket affair in 1886. Go on.
That makes it sound nicer than it was.
Oh yeah. No, that was yeah. I mean, there was a.
And the Daily News was right there, wasn't it at the time?
It was. It was nearby. The offices were nearby, and it hadn't been around very long either. And so there was a labor demonstration. A bomb went off. Several people were killed, and then four people eventually hanged in connection with that. And so we go on the murder of Carter Harrison. Let's see who else. H.H. Holmes is in there. Mm-hmm. Talk about the
Carter Harrison was the mayor.
The mayor, yes.
Right.
The
assassinated
mayor.
His own home.
Right.
During the 1893.
At the end of it. At the end of the World's Fair.
World's Fair, right.
And so then we have, let's see.
That was a strange situation, too, because a guy just showed up.
He did.
At his house, rang the doorbell, and they let him in. And they Carter did. Harrison would apparently take citizens into his parlor and talk to them about things. I'm assuming he also got envelopes filled with cash. That's, you know, this is the Chicago way. Right. And then he got buttonholed by the guy.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. He did let people come in often, and this time the maid let him in, and he was, the mayor had been in the back taking a nap, and this guy, Patrick Prendergast, decided to just gun him down right in his home. So we have that. We have the women who inspired the Play Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So that's in there as well. And then it ends with the lipstick killer, Bill Herons, and Richard Speck in 1966.
The nurses. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Who can forget?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. William Herons. Right.
Is there a Gacy?
We didn't go into Gacy, no. We ended it with Richard Speck.
Because actually, by then, the Daily News was defunct.
It was.
By the time we got to Gacy, right?
Exactly
the Daily News went out in 1978. I think I still have the last edition of it. Because my parents were big Daily News, Tribune in the morning, Daily News at night.
Yeah.
And you had it delivered?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, and I read all through that last edition where they talked all about their history and, you know, and the cases that they'd cover, the putting together the Foreign News Service that they did. It was a really remarkable issue.
And Royko, you remember, Royko was in the Daily News.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, it was such a, and I thought that their sports coverage was better. Mm-hmm. It was, I always, with all due respect to our former corporate masters here. I always liked the scrappiness of the of that organization, of the field organization, you know, whoever owned that during those times, whether it was, you know, the Sun-Times or the Daily News. I just, you know, they always had that, like, hey, we're not taking it seriously as the Tribune, and the Tribune is, you know, for rich people. We're going to go out and we're going to tell the stories. We're going to go behind the power brokers, because the Tribune sometimes was fainting to the power brokers.
Sure.
That was their belief at the time.
Right.
Not always, it was not true.
Sure,
love the idea that you had this scrappy number two that was going to, like, take him out. And of course, remember the Tribune had an evening, the Chicago Today, right?
Right.
It was their afternoon paper that eventually became that. There was a way of, you know, the great competition in this town. And I'm very still proud and happy that Chicago still has two very, very vital.
Yeah.
So
we're so lucky.
And I think we've talked about it before, just about how this city's just full of great reporters.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Continue to see that.
Can I stop here 1 second? I want to come back and I want to ask you, because you covered Blagojevich as well as anybody.
The Appeal.
The Appeal.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
There is a story that when Donald Trump was in town last week for his fundraiser, he sort of did a straw poll in the Reno. I asked, he was addressing the room of
major donors.
Donors and power brokers and stuff like that that were in the room with him, and sort of threw it out there into the room and, you know, by applause, who here thinks that we should be pardoning Rob Blagojevich? I want to get your take on that as well. So we'll talk about that on the other side. But first, let's check in now with Lauren Lampko, what's happening on the roadways. John Seidel is with us. Second City Sinners is the book. And of course, John Seidel is a great Sun-Timesman.
He is.
He's written this book based on the Chronicles of the Chicago Daily News, which to my eye is probably my favorite journalistic enterprise in this city's history. As a kid, that was the first newspaper I watched, you know, go under. And even at that point in my home, I don't know, I was 10 years old or whatever I was, my parents made a big deal out of the fact that, you know, a newspaper was closing.
I know.
And, you know,
they lament it.
And there were, how many newspapers in this town were there? At one point in the early 20th century, I think there were over a dozen.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the total. There were a lot, though. I mean, there was the, I mean, at one point, the Trib, the Daily News, the Herald and Examiner, the Inter-Ocean, several others whose names are escaping me now, and of course we're I think we were around 4 when the Daily News shut down, right? And
and that was it, right? Exactly. Yeah. Today I think was still in operation,
right.
And then that closed right thereafter.
Right.
All right, let's talk about the Blagojevich appeal for a second, because as we mentioned, the president was here last week, and, you know, with a group of fundraisers and donors, he talked about the fact that maybe I will pardon this guy or commute the sentence at least. Patty Blagojevich has been rather mum recently. Obviously, she's been going on Fox News and trying to get the president's attention for this, at least a commutation, not a full pardon. And what are you hearing about that?
You know, I just think it's interesting that the talk has started again, you know, and we're hearing
like 4 or 5 years left, though, right? I think at this point
he does. Yeah, I think 2024. Yeah, I think is when he's due out. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody got wound up, I think, in August when Trump started talking about it. And I was one of the reporters who wound up outside Blagojevich's prison in Colorado, just waiting just in case. And then when that didn't happen, everything just went silent. Everybody went radio silent. Nobody wanted to talk about it anymore. I think some people were really upset about the way that went down. And now all of a sudden it's back. And you know, we've seen these waves, and it's hard to know what to make of it, because it's come up and then it's gone away and then it came up big. And so I think we're all just watching and trying to figure out what Trump might be thinking.
I'm just surprised that everybody was saying that was at that meeting, well, I think it's going to happen within the next day or so.
Well, because the way he made it sound, I talked to someone who was in that room, and they said that there were cheers when they said, should I pardon Blagojevich? And you would think, you know, that may be a crowd that they may not think that way, but apparently they did. He said, well, yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about doing it soon, really soon, was what he said. And it seems obviously very top of mind to him. There are a number of things going on in the country, right? There are a lot of things you can talk about. Right. And the fact that that came up, it shows you
that it's still on his mind. And you're right. It hasn't gone away.
I have a different take on this, because I look at it and I think, he's a guy who strikes me as someone who is got a short attention span. And that when he was here in Chicago, he's thinking, what am I going to talk to Chicagoans about? Oh, yeah, Blagojevich. And then he just, he brought that up because that was like at the top of his mind at that moment as he tried to localize what was going on. And then he gets on Air Force One and he goes back to Washington and everything else that's going on. And he stops and it goes away at the moment. Because I just don't know, with all the other things, right. That are going on, when he's got a bunch of lawyers in the Oval Office right now, I don't think the Blagojevich commutation is really, front and center.
But I think it's a big bet, right? I think you'd be betting against odds right now to say that when he leaves office, whenever that is, that I think that there will be some movement there. And the fact that he keeps mentioning it tells me even more. You get more convinced.
I'm always surprised by the number of people who say to me, it's enough already. Let him go. It's enough already. And it's a funny thing, because we've got to remember, it's amazing how short our memory is about this. There was a reason that they banged him as hard as they did, which was he was the guy who was running as the clean alternative to George Ryan.
Right.
And said, I would never do any of this, never do any of this, never do any of this. And it was from day one the stuff started. Right. And it was a way, finally, the federal courts here stopping and saying, hey, we got to stop. Are you people listening? Because everybody was getting 10 months somewhere.
There had been a buildup, right?
Yeah.
The sentences have been getting longer and longer. And you're right. Then finally, Judge Zagel just brought the hammer down.
Yes.
At least that's what he was thinking, that maybe a message would be sent.
But clearly not.
Right?
Because we're literally, it's like having a flood in your basement. It's just all of a sudden the water's rising again of these guys. There's,
way to put it.
The foosball table is floating in the basement again, is what's going on. All right, John Seidel, great work.
Yes, I'm excited about the book.
Thanks, guys.
Second City Sinners, True Crime from Historic Chicago's Deadly Streets. And I think this is going to be a national bestseller, too, because this is like one of those things where people, because people stop and they think about what's a crime-ridden city? Oh, yeah, Chicago. if I'm walking in the airport and I'm going through, you're looking at that big section there of the books I can read on the airplane. This is one of them.
Appreciate
I'd also
it.
Read this in jury duty, too.
Okay, good.
This is the kind of thing that would get you out of the courtroom if you read this in jury
good
duty.
Good holiday book, too.
Yeah. Oh, my God. For people who love this stuff.
And I do love that stuff.
People who love the Chicago Daily News, too.
They do.
Which is
history.
A great iconic fixture in Chicago. John, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you
being
John.
With us.
Appreciate it.
All right. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where the news is going to be coming to you from. That's coming your way in just about 2 minutes. And then, of course, the great Justin Kaufman will hold forth here on 720. WGN. Stay right here.